Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. Now, we all go through tough times in our life. They are struggles. They are things that harden us, that make us stronger, that is our origin stories, if you were a superhero. And today's guest has one heck of a story. His name is Gary Buckman, and he is the author of the new book, Broken to Brilliant. And I had the pleasure of meeting Gary at an event a couple years ago, actually, where he told me the story of a book that he was writing at the time about where, when he was 20 years old in college, he broke his neck in a gymnastics accident. He was part of the gymnastics team, and the doctor said that he would never walk again, and that he refused to take that diagnosis, and he willed himself, he visualized himself back to health. He healed himself using the power of his mind. Now, this was back in 1972 when there wasn't a lot of science to back up the visualizations and what happens when you visualize to the your physiology when you do things like that. But he was able to not only be able to get his legs back, his arms back, which he did over the course of a couple years, but he also went back and competed at a college level, on a national level, again as a gymnast. And the one specific move that broke his neck, when he went back, he did it again one more time just to prove to himself that he could do it. And he did. His story is truly inspiring, and I cannot wait for you to listen to it. So let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show Gary Buckman. How you doing, Gary?
Good, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being on the show, man. I mean, you and I met, God, it's a little bit over a year ago now, year and change ago. More than that because of COVID. So it's probably been like, it's been almost a couple years now, almost, that we met at, a great event, and we were sitting there eating lunch, between lectures, and your beautiful wife, started up this conversation about telling me and my wife about your story, which we just sit there like in awe of this story that you were. I was just sitting there like, what's going on? And then you came over and started talking about this amazing story. And I remember then I'm like, where's the book? And Victoria, your wife, says, oh, he's working on it. He's working on it. And what did I tell you at that meeting?
You said, Gary, it's important. You need to finish that book. Finish that book, man.
Finish it and get it out there because the world needs this story. So first, before I just want to know, how can you tell me, just get into the story of Broken to Brilliant. What is, you know, I don't want you to tell me the entire story because that would be the audiobook, but tell me the story of Broken to Brilliant, and it is brilliant.
Thank you. Well, it's about, you know, when I was in college, I was a top level gymnast. And one day at practice, I was doing a vault that only two or three people in the country were trying at the time. And I took off on the wrong foot. And I landed on my head from about 8.5 feet in the air from a full speed run, knocked me completely out. When I regained consciousness, my neck was broken and I was paralyzed.
How old were you?
20 years old.
Jesus Christ.
Just turned 20. Yeah. It's my sophomore year in college. And I went to the hospital, obviously, and I was in traction 24/7. I was there for like 8 weeks. About 4 weeks into my stay, my doctor came in and said, Gary, you're not responding to any of the treatments, so you're going to be paralyzed for the rest of your life. And I said, no, that's not my plan, doc. And so I did a lot of visualization. And, but I think the main thing was, you know, something inside of me told me, you know, that I could heal myself. And at the time I really wasn't aware of what that was,
right.
You know, and, you know, in hindsight, I know now that's, you know, my higher self, God, you know, the universe telling me, you know, hey, you can do this. And so I healed myself. It took me 3 years total to get back into competition. I competed again. I did the vault that broke my neck. I went on to a coaching career in a private club system. And I developed a program that, you know, it was a sequential basic program that taught total body awareness. And my kids were so successful that they asked me to be on the USA coaching staff. And I got to travel all over the world with the USA team. So that's kind of the story in a nutshell
A nutshell. All right. So let's go back a little. Let's dig a little deeper into this. All right. So what goes through your mind as a 20-year-old, you know, essentially man, boy, it's relatively speaking, because I know I wasn't a man at 20. No. You might have definitely been, but I definitely wasn't. So as a 20-year-old guy, you get the news that the doctor comes in and says, you're not going to walk anymore. What does that do to your, what's that conversation like?
Oh man, your inner mind chatter just goes, you know, ballistic, and you know, anything and everything you can imagine, you know, any kind of emotion, you know, like instantly you're thinking, okay, you know, am I going to be like this the rest of my life? Is anybody ever going to love me? What are my parents going to think? Am I going to be able to go back to school? You know, what am I going to do? I can't even take care of myself. You know, at that time, you know, they were feeding me, bathing me, helping me go to the bathroom. I was an invalid. And, at that point, you know, I had gained everything in my life through the physical, you know, through physical feats.
Right.
Oh, and I was noticed, you know, I was a gymnast and people recognized me for that talent. And so I was, you know, your whole life changed. You're like, oh my God, you know, who am I? You know, who am I now that I can't do all this stuff, you know, and then what is my life going to be like? I totally freaked out.
So so at that point, and the doctor says, you're not going to walk again. So obviously your entire world comes crashing down around you. What inside you told you that this is not your diagnosis? Like there's that voice, but there was no tools. It's not like you had that, like, oh, let me get that book on how to heal yourself using visualization. Like how do you get to that point? Like at what point did you just say, you know what? I'm going to heal myself. How did you get from my life is over to no, it's not over and I'm going to take control? How did you get there?
Yeah, you know, what I did was, you know, I remember after when the doctor gave me those words, you know, everything just kind of went blank, you know, and he kept talking and it was like chatter in the background, just noise. And I remember telling the nurses, you know, don't let anybody in to see me today. I need a whole day to myself. And I took a whole day and I just went through the gamut of emotions and freaked out and did everything. And then I kind of gave myself that, you know, being an athlete, you know, you kind of have a mindset of, you know, like you got timetables. So I thought, okay, I'm going to give myself 24 hours to just feel it all and freak out and do whatever, you know, and there's no timetable to that. You could, you know, people might need longer than that, but I just gave myself 24 hours. And then after the 24 hour period, I said, okay, I don't know how, you know, but I'm going to heal myself. And I think a lot of it had to do, you know, with my bringing up as a child. You know, I was, you know, brought up in the 50s and the 60s, and we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, we weren't poor, but you know, when I asked for things, the typical answer was, no, you can't afford that. You can't have that, you know, no. And so, you know, all the time I figured out ways to get things. You know, one of the things that I talk about in the book is a unicycle story is I saw, you know, this unicycle club at a parade, 4th of July parade. And man, it was so impressive. And I thought, God, that's what I want to do. And I asked if I could have one. And, you know, my dad said, well, let's see how much they are. And of course, they were as much as a house payment in those days, you know. So they said, nope, you can't have that. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, I'm devastated. And I thought, you know, well, can I build one? You know, and my dad goes, yeah, you know, we have an old tricycle. And, you know, so I built one. So it's kind of like my upbringing kind of thought, you know, made me get creative. And, you know, every time I got a lot of no answers in my life, mm-hmm. you know. And so I thought, well, this is no different. He gave me a no answer. And I said, no, I'm going to figure some other way out of this. You know, and a lot of it had to do to, I'll be honest with you, Alex, is my mother was a driving force in our family. And she was 4'11" and 90 pounds, you know, mm-hmm. and she was this tough Iowa farm girl. And she always told me, no matter what, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. And she always kept reminding me, dynamite comes in small packages. So I think it had a lot to do with, you know, my mom's influence, and then, you know, just me, you know, just figuring things out, you know, from childhood.
So, okay. So what's the actual process in your mind? Like when you decide to like, I'm going to start building myself up again, what did you do? Like, what is that process like in your mind? Are you like, you just start literally reconstructing your back in your mind? How do you do that?
Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, being a gymnast, you know, we visualized our routines all the time, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, I'd see myself doing my routines and hitting them and doing them. And then I'd go out and perform them. So I started using visualization, and I was a physical education major. So I had taken anatomy and, you know, physiology. So I knew how the human body worked. So I visualized the nerve impulses going from my brain, you know, through the neural pathways into my muscles and making them work again. I got real specific about that kind of a thing. But I also saw myself, you know, back all the way healed, you know, back with my teammates, back in school, back in the gym working out, back competing again in Acker Gym in front of 6,000 people, you know, going on to my dream job, you know, as a coach in the private club sector, all of that, and I would actually feel that too. You know, I would see it and I would feel it. And, you know, I just utilized what I had at the time, you know, and visualization was my most powerful tool, because, you know, I was flat on my back in traction staring at the ceiling. So I didn't have anything else to do, you know, right. You know, so I just did that 24/7. And, another thing that was very, very important, you know, how we never do anything in our life alone. I had this amazing support team, and they were my teammates, who were also my roommates. We all lived in a team house together. And I think back on it now, and here's a bunch of other 20-year-olds, right? And we're all living together, and they're in school. And they made sure, I don't know how they did this, because I was, you know, in the hospital, I didn't think about this, but they made sure that every day somebody was at the hospital supporting me, sometimes multiple people. But every day they were there. And from their support and me visualizing, you know, I got my legs back and was able to walk.
So you're visualizing it in your mind. And how long does it take before you actually feel or see something? Because I'm imagining this doesn't happen overnight. This takes time to do. So when did you actually first see something? How many weeks, how many days, how many months, how many hours?
Yeah, you know, it was actually, that's a great question, because, you know, it was exactly like 2 weeks to the day almost when I got the news. And I'd been visualizing from day one, you know, almost, you know, so I'd been visualizing for 6 weeks total now, mm-hmm. with that 2 weeks after the news. And one day, one of my roommates came in, you know, and teammates came in, and I said, you know, today's the day. And they said, today's the day for what? And I said, today's the day I'm going to wiggle my toes. And they go, really? And he goes, really? I go, yeah. And so I said, pull up the sheet, and, you know, and I'm going to say now, and you tell me if they move, because I can't see them. So he goes, okay. And I said, okay, here we go. And I said, now. And he goes, yeah, they moved. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it again to make sure it's not a muscle twitch. And I said, okay, here it goes. And he goes, yeah, they moved. And then I started kicking my leg, and then I got my legs back and I was able to walk again. But my arms were still gone. My arms did not respond for a long, long time. But, you know, 2 weeks later, the doctors came in and said, you know what? There's nothing more we can do for you. It was a miracle. You got your leg back. You can walk again, but we're just going to send you home. So mm-hmm. they actually sent me home, and I went home with the guys back to the team house with no arms.
So, this is amazing. What year was this around?
This was 1972.
Okay, so 1972. So technology, I was born in 74, so I remember. I remember the 70s. I remember the technology wasn't that advanced. So right. They thought that you were never going to walk again, and yet they saw your feet move and your legs move. Mm-hmm. What did the doctor say?
He had no explanation. You know, that's what, you know, he just said it was like, he said, you know, it's a miracle that your leg came back, you know, and that, you know, that you're walking again. He says, you know, But I'm just going to keep telling, that might be all you get, you know? So it's like, they said there's nothing more they could do for me. So they released me. But yeah, in those days, all we had was x-rays. There was no MRIs.
Right.
So they don't know they can't see all of the things that they can see nowadays and tell you, you know? And so that's all they had to go by was an x-ray. And then and all of the treatments they were giving me for the complete time I was in there, I wasn't responding. So they said, well, that's it. I think one of the things that people need to know, I loved my doctor, and he helped me and he put me back together and stuff. But, I just didn't want to accept his diagnosis and prognosis fully, completely, so I would never say not to listen to your doctor, because they're great people and they help people. But also, discern what you need and what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Well, the diagnosis was true. You broke your back. I mean, that's reality. The reality is that you broke your neck. You were paralyzed. That's not in question.
No.
That question was, can I come back? And that's where doctors sometimes aren't. That's where the wiggle room is as far as listening. Because the prognosis is the prognosis. It's like, look.
Yep.
This is what happened. This is the diagnosis. Your back is broken.
Yep.
Now, during those first 6 weeks, when you're doing visualization essentially almost 24 hours a day, and you've got nothing else to do, how did you get through that time? I mean, you had to mentally, that must have been extremely tough for you. At a certain point, you must have had some doubt fall in there, going, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. Just accept what – there has to be that voice in your head during this time, right? Just accept what the universe has given you and move on, and maybe you'll have some sort of a life, and that voice was there, correct?
Yes, that voice was there. You have loud and clear all the time, and like I said, it was good that I had the support of my teammates. But one of the things that I talk about in the book is my roommate. I had a roommate next door to me. His name was Earl, and he was in there for a hip replacement. He was 70 something years old. And that guy got me through. I swear to God, he would talk to me, I remember, the next day when I woke up, from, the nightmare, and I was by myself, and I was, and I was scared and afraid. And this soothing voice comes from, there's a divider, a curtain. So we can't see each other, and I can't turn to look and see him or nothing. But he says, hey, good morning, Rumi. My name is Earl. And, and I said, hello, Earl, I'm Gary. And then we started talking, and he talked to me every day. You know what I mean? And he gave me insight and new perceptions on life. We would talk about everything from, our childhood to friends, girlfriends, accidents, whatever, we talked about everything in life. And his wisdom, I'm 20, he's 70 something. I would say I'd say what I was feeling. And he goes, well, you might want to look at it like this, and he would give, give another perspective. And he got me through, I swear, man. He, and we talked for a good month before he could get up and walk and come over and see me. And that was exciting and thrilling when we finally got to meet face to face. And he was everything that I imagined, the jolly face and the balding hair he was just great.
So during the toughest time in your, essentially in your entire life up to that point, arguably of your life period, the universe sends you an angel, essentially.
Yes.
And that angel is sitting next to you. And, if whether you believe in the universe, you don't. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, there's some sort of belief in something of a higher power. But isn't it weird that you didn't get the crotchety old guy who's like, "Shut up, kid. Yeah, it's okay. I was in WW2. This was my. You didn't get that guy, because you arguably could have gotten that guy, but you got a beautiful soul that just was there to help you and guide you and teach you and kind of just walk you through this valley of pain that you were going through. Isn't it amazing how the universe works?
Yes. You know, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps right now. You're talking about it. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, Angel Earl. I mean, that was God in the universe just helping me out completely. Because without him, I swear, I probably would have went crazy.
Right. That, I was going to say, like, when I heard the story originally, I'm like, okay, you're sitting there. You can't move. You're looking up into essentially a white ceiling, I'm assuming. You can't move. Were you able to move your neck at all or no?
No. The traction was so tight that, you know, I could hardly open my mouth. They would have to take the traction off so that they could feed me and then put it back on again, you know.
So you were basically locked into a white wall. So that's maddening. I mean, that's madness for any human being just to be locked like that. So
yep.
I was just thinking to myself before we started talking, I was like, if you're locked in there for like a month or two, hell, a day or two, you lose your mind but luckily you did have your teammates and you had Earl, Angel Earl, there yep. guiding you through this entire process. That's remarkable. So you start moving your legs and are you able to walk out?
Yeah. I you know, cause I remember, you know, Earl would say, you know, I'm going to come over and see you today, you know, and then I remember, you know, he walked off and walked down the hallway and I told him, I said, well, pretty soon I'll take walks with you, Earl, I promise, you know? And so after I got my legs back, then I, you know, within a day or two, you know, I was taking walks with Earl. So we walked together, you know, for, about a week and a half before I got released, you know?
And then, but your arms wouldn't react.
My arms wouldn't come back.
So how long did it take? So once you're home, you have your legs back, but you have no arms. So how long before and what's the – because there's a different process with being in the hospital in traction with Angel Earl and your and your teammates. Where – did you go back home? Did you go back to where the teammates were? Where did you go?
Yeah, I went back to the team house. I went home with the guys. They came and picked me up. All of them came and picked me up. And
that's amazing.
You know, drove me home. And yeah, now they were my – you know. Nursemaids. They were having to feed me and bathe me and, you know, dress me and, you know,
that's amazing.
You know? It is. I mean, you know, and the thing about it was the 20-year-old mentality was the exact medicine I needed to, you know, to feel normal again. You know, they didn't treat me any differently, you know, and I was the butt of a lot of jokes and everything, you know, and they had interesting ways of feeding me, like, you know, like from across the, you know, table with a spoon and trying to get it into my mouth, you know, so I looked like I'd been in a food fight, but I got fed, but that wasn't all the time. Sure. But, you know, I mean, you know, it was just, you know, they treated me like normal. They didn't make a big deal out of it, you know, and also too, you know, like when I started to have a, you know, like a self-pity party or something, you know, start feeling down and out, you know, they would give me, you know, they'd get right on me. They'd get right on my case, you know, say, hey, we're not listening to this negativity crap, you know, snap out of it, man. You're with us. You know, we know what you're going to do, you know? So, yeah, I mean, they kept me on the straight and narrow too. They supported me and then they gave me tough love.
Because during that process, even after you had already had the proof that your legs were able to come back, but when the arms weren't reacting as quickly as you would like them to, I'm assuming that doubt started coming in, that anger started coming in. And you had to, because when you're in the room alone, there's not a lot, but when you start seeing your friends and the life that you should be living in your mind, I got to believe that anger just starts bubbling up. So how did it was your teammates that helped you get through that? But I'm assuming there's also those times quietly when your teammates weren't around that you dealt with that. How did you deal with it?
Well, you know, I think, you know, it helped me in 20, but also I really at the time I didn't think a lot about it, but I was turning inward. You know, I was turning inward to just calm myself down and you know, believe in myself. But, you know, at that time, I didn't realize, you know, that was the love of my higher self and God speaking to me, through me, at me, with me, you know. But I didn't get it because I was so young, you know. And but, yeah, I did a lot of just being quiet and, you know, thinking about, you know, you made a decision and – you know, you got all the support. You're going to make it. You know, you're going to make it. You know, it doesn't look good now. It doesn't look, you know, like, you know, not all the time you're going to be up. But, you know, I just kept thinking, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. Like anything, any goal that I set for myself. And one of the things that kept me going, Alex, to be honest with you, was the fact that when, if the nerve impulses and the feeling and the sensation went all the way to my toe, for sure, it's coming back to my arms. That's closer to the brain. It's got to come back. So that's what kept me going a lot of times. Like, okay, if it went there, it's coming here.
It's just going to take its time. It's going to take its time to get there. Yeah. So are you still – so you're visualizing still every day?
Yeah. Every day. And I would go up every night, you know, in my room, and I would – you know, I could swing my arms from my shoulders. You know, I could move my torso. And I'd swing an arm up into my lap, and I would just sit there, you know, and look at my hand, you know, and I'd just be going, you know, move. You know, I just wanted to open my fingers, you know. Mm-hmm. And but I would do that every night, you know, and, you know, and then you're always in pain too, because the back muscles are spasming to protect the spinal cord. So you never can get comfortable. You're just always in pain, you know. Mm-hmm. Just to let you know, the doctor, when I got out, the doctor was having me come in like every 2 weeks for checkups. But a lot of times, you know, he would have to cancel because he was an orthopedic surgeon and he'd have surgery or whatever. And then he kept telling me the same old thing, you know, like, we don't know. And this is it, you know. And so I got tired of going to him. So I stopped going to him, you know, because I thought, you know, I'm healing myself. I got my teammates, you know, I'm living my life. The heck with this, you know. So I stopped going to him. And probably about 3 months later, I woke up one morning and all of the pain was gone. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, like, I'd forgotten about this sensation of being pain free, you know, like, because I was constantly hurting all the time. And I thought, wow, this is cool, you know, and I took it in a little bit. And then I started thinking, okay, well, why is this happening? You know, why am I not hurting? You know, what's the deal here? You know, so, you know, I had the guys call the team doctor. I mean, I had him call the doctor, and I went in for an appointment. And of course, he was furious. You know, he hadn't seen me in 3 months. You know, he wasn't very happy. He was, where the hell have you been? You know, and how the heck do you have me help you if you don't show up? You know, and right. He said, where have you been? I said, I've been out healing myself, doc.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
I want to stop you
for there for a second. This is like 72, 73. Yeah. You saying I'm out healing myself is essentially quackery. You've lost your mind. In today's world, it's slightly more acceptable. It's right. Because there is so much information about visualization and Dr. Joe I forgot his name.
Joe Dispenza. Yeah, he's got all the science now.
So there's science behind all this stuff as far as the visualization, and there's an actual thing behind it. But I can only imagine, I would love to be in the room with you, just a 20-year-old looking at a doctor who's probably in his 50s or 60s at that point in the game, looking at you going, you're mad. So I just wanted everybody to understand the world that we are living in when this is happening. It is not today's world. It is definitely a different time.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, so he goes, well, we need to take x-rays. And so, you know, my inner chatter says, yeah, fine, go ahead, take your stupid x-rays, you know. And so I'm anticipating good news, you know, because I'm figuring, you know, it's been like, gosh, 9 months or more since the injury. And so he comes back and he goes, you need an operation immediately. And I go, what? What are you talking about? He says, come over here, you know. And so he puts the x-ray up on the machine, you know, and lights it up. And of course, you know, like I said, I'm a PE major, so I know what the spinal column is supposed to look like. Well, now, you know, the initial injury was a compression fracture where I landed on my head and it disintegrated the disc between the vertebrae and cracked the vertebrae in half. And it also, it subluxed it and it slid it like this, you know.
Oh, my God.
But the back muscle spasmed and pulled everything back into place. So, you know, when the original x-rays, they said, yeah, your neck's broken, but everything's aligned. Well, now the back muscles finally loosened up. Well, it slipped back out. And there was like a big bone spur growing out the front of one of, you know, my seventh vertebrae where the body was trying to heal itself. And the vertebrae was still cracked and, you know, cracked. And so he goes, you know how much a millimeter or two is? And I said, yeah. He says, well, that's what your vertebrae's hanging on by. He said, someone can come up and slap you on the back to say hello, and that vertebrae will slip off, cut your cord, and it's either going to kill you or you're going to go down and be a quadriplegic for the rest of your life. And I'm like going, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. You know, like all this time I think I'm healing, and now you're telling me I'm a walking time bomb and I could die? What? Are you out of your mind? You know, he says, yeah, you need an operation immediately, and we have to schedule it within the next day or two because, you know, I don't want you walking around. And so I said, okay. So, you know, so I had an operation, you know.
Because at that point, you're like, there's the x-ray. yeah. I've taken classes. I understand what that means.
Yeah.
So so they put your back.
Yeah.
Were your arms yet there or not yet? Yeah.
Nope. The arms are still. Yeah, no.
So they put you back in, yep. And they bolt you together like Frankenstein or something.
Because they actually cut a bone chip out of your hip, out of your iliac crest, and they put it in between, and they put you in neck and let it fuse together naturally as a bone. So my sixth and seventh vertebrae is one big bone now, just one vertebrae. So it's natural. It's, you know, I don't have any screws or anything in there. So But it took 6 months. Yeah, it took 6 months for that to happen. But then it's like, okay, you know, you hear about hip pointers or a bone bruise or something. Oh, my gosh, now I got this other pain in my hip. And everybody goes, well, how's your neck? I said, my neck is fine. My hip is killing me.
And you're 21 at this point, probably.
Yeah, it's like, Jesus. Oh, my God. And, you know, yeah, so I had to walk that off, you know. So it's like,
how many months did it take you, or how many years did it take you before the arms started coming back?
Well, it took, you know, I had the operation in September. And in November, I was out walking in one of my typical walks. And, you know, it's cold up there in Chico. And all of a sudden, I felt the cold on my hands. And I noticed that my arms were swinging. I'm like, oh, my God. I stopped dead in my tracks and went, you know, and I thought, okay. So with a thought, I lifted my arms up, you know, bent them, you know. And then I wiggled my fingers, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, and I put my arm, I'm back, you know, like, thank God I'm back, you know. And so that's when the motor and the sensory came back, you know. So it'd been almost, you know, so it was, I broke it in February and I got all the total feeling back in the middle of November.
Okay. And then the question is though, you've got your arms back now. And then from the point where you're like, oh my God, a miracle has happened finally. I am back.
Yeah.
Now most human beings, Gary, would stop there, Gary. They would just go, thank you. Thank you, universe. Thank you, God. Thank you. I'm going to go on and live a normal life.
Yeah.
But Gary said, no. You know, I really want to hit that thing I was trying to hit when I broke my neck. I'm going to go back into comp. What? What?
Yeah. I just thought that was a natural path. I just thought.
Obviously, Gary.
Yeah.
You understand. You understand from my point, from most human beings, you're not well.
Yeah. Somebody told, you know, it's funny. I told that story to somebody else, you know, and they go, you need to have your head examined. You know, I said, well, yeah, I don't know. But yeah, so, you know, yeah. And so it took me from that point. This was, you know, now, you know, in 1973. So it's like it took me probably about 18 months to get all the way back. 1974, 75 season was my best season, my senior year. I stayed around an extra year for college since I got hurt. And that year was my best season ever.
And you just started working out. Are you still visualizing during this entire time?
Oh yeah, yeah, still visualizing and doing things. And then you know, he gave me this little goosh, you know, this little goosh ball thing, you know, that became like an extra appendage of my body. I was like squeezing that thing in my jacket pocket all day long, and you know, and then I had to learn how to, you know, I had to get all my dexterity back. So he said, you know, you got to learn how to touch your fingers like this, forward and backwards. Which I couldn't do at the time. I couldn't do that, and I couldn't make a fist, and so I had to get all my, you know, my fine motor skills back first, so I could, you know, and I had a lot of incentive because I wanted to be able to take care of myself. I wanted to be able to feed myself again, and you know, dress myself, button my own pants, and you know, that kind of stuff. So I got all of that back, and then I started working on the strength, and I assessed my upper body strength immediately, which, you know, after 3 weeks of non-use of muscles, they start to atrophy. So mm-hmm. it's been like nine months, you know, total almost, you know, now it's like, you know, you atrophied away to nothing. And I'm not that big of a guy anyway. So I had to, you know, I had to come back, you know, I couldn't support myself. I couldn't even, you know, support myself on my arms. Like I, you know,
like a gymnast would.
A gymnast could, you know, I couldn't even get up on my arms, you know, so I had to come back. So it took, you know, so I made sure that, you know, that I, in my training that I trained all the basic things that I needed, and I got all my strength and flexibility back. And I actually came back stronger than when I left before the injury.
Interesting. So you came back strong. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think just because, you know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I trained the right way and didn't leave anything out, you know, so, and I wanted to, you know, and I was older now too, you know what I mean? You're like guys physically mature later, you know,
okay,
you know,
true.
You know, yeah. You know, so now, you know, but and one of the things that I didn't realize at the time was how much fun I thought it was when I was in high school and my younger years in college doing strength. You know, strength workouts were like exciting, fun. You know, it's like, I like doing that, you know, and now it's like, oh my God, this is hard. You know, it's like, this is, you know, cause I'm coming from way below what I've ever been before. And I had to come back and I'm like going, oh my God, this is, you know, depressing almost, you know, but it was motivation and incentive to come back. And so I told myself, you know, one of the things that I did the day that I got my arms back was, I mean, I made a promise to God and the universe at that point. I said, you know, I'll never take this body of mine for granted again. I will never do that. I will keep it healthy. And today, you know, this year I turned 70. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm still working out and I'm still bouncing on the trampoline with my grandsons. And so, you know, I've kept my word that way. But yeah, it kind of drove me to actually, you know, make sure that when I came back, I had to come back stronger. And I also had to overcome some things because, like, you know, you have all these little extrinsic and intrinsic muscles in your hands to hold on to things. And holding on to the apparatus was one of my biggest things coming back. I was strong enough to do things, but I didn't have the hand strength anymore because, you know, and to this day, I still have one hand that's not all the way back. That's the only thing I have. I mean, it works, but you can see if you ever see me, you know, you'll see that one hand has all the muscles in it and the other hand is like little. So I had to overcome it by the forearm. The forearm strength had to get so strong to hold on to things, you know, and I had to make sure that I could hold on to the apparatus, you know, before I could come all the way back. So I had to keep working and working and working and working.
The one thing I find interesting is that, and I think this is something that the universe does to us all the time, where you got your arm back, you got your arms back, but that was just the beginning of the conversation.
Yeah.
That, you know, you got your legs back, but that was just the beginning of the conversation. It's like now we're giving you a seed. It's time for you to grow it and it's time for you to put the work in and build it back up. But you're going to have to do the work. We'll open the door, but you got to go through it and you're going to have to do the work. And that was when you got your arms back, you needed to do an insane amount of work to come back. Yeah. And not just to come back to do your normal stuff, but then you also wanted to compete again. Because again, Gary's not well. So, I mean, we've established that already. So you had to do even so much more work. And I think that's something that people don't understand is that when, you know, the higher power, the universe, God gives you something, they think, oh, that's it. I'm good. Like, nope. It's like in my world, you know, if you get a part, if you get a project, a film project, and you're like, okay, you've just got finance to make a movie. Wow. That's the beginning of the conversation. It's not like some directors don't understand that. Some people are like, oh, I'm good. I'm like, no, you're not. Now the real work starts.
Yeah.
Cause you thought the work to get here was the real work. No. Now the real work starts. And that's where many people just fall because it took so much. Listen, look, I can't even comprehend trying to rebuild my body with visualization for 6 weeks in a room in a hospital in 1972, looking up at a white ceiling. That's an insane amount of work. But then when you got your feet, your legs back, you're like, nope, that's just now the beginning of the conversation. I think that's a lesson that the audience should really take is that when you're giving that little nugget that you've been looking for, most of the time, the work starts there. Do you agree?
I do. Totally. Totally, Alex. I, you know, and I think, you know, like when, one of the things that we need to do, you know, in our life, and one of the things that I wanted to share with the book was, you know, like connecting the dots of your life, being able to see the gifts in every experience or, you know, programming that you got or reprimand or whatever, you know, the so-called bad things, you know, quote, bad things that happen to your life are actually most of the time the catalyst for all of the amazing things that happen in your life. You know, and like you said, when the universe gives you something, then you take that gift and you run with it, you know. And I think that really propelled me, you know, like the comeback to the competitive thing really helped me, you know, in my career, you know, because there was a lot, you know, when I got my dream job back with my, you know, mentor back at the private club business, you know, and I got there, you know, I'm there. Like you said, yeah, there's the beginning, right? Well, first day on the job, I realized that, oh my gosh, you know, I don't have spotting skills. I don't know how to spot these kids through these and manipulate them through these moves safely, you know, and surely me, I'm not going to let somebody get hurt, you know? And I thought, oh my gosh, my career's over before it started. You know, I don't know how to spot. I'm done. But no, you know, so I had to figure a way to learn how to spot, you know, safely, right, you know, before practice, you know, with little kids and do different things. So it's like, yeah, here you go, you know? And so it's like anything. It's, I think one of the things that athletes have that you hear a lot of, you know, like, you know, you need to get back to the basics. Basics are very important, you know, but the reason that the basics are important is because of the struggle. Basics are so boring and a pain in the rear end, and they're so repetitive and it's like, oh my God, you know, but when you do it, it develops so much awareness and strength and, you know, ability that it allows you to reach your full potential. And I think when people, like you said, if they can see the gift and then take it on from there, they're going to be able to reach their full potential.
I mean, you are, you're not only an inspiration, but I find that when you are going through what you were going through and you're seeing the negative thing, all the bad things that this is a bad, look, it's a bad thing. It's a bad, yeah. You broke your neck at 20. Most people's life is over at that point. Those are you went through so much struggle early in your life. I have to imagine that most of anything else you tackled in your life, you were like, at least I didn't break my neck.
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
It's pretty much all downhill at this point. Like you're Atlas. You've already lifted that boulder up the mountain already at a young age. So almost anything that the world throws at you, and I'm not assuming that, but I guess I am making that assumption that most things that are thrown in front of your path at that point, you're like, at least I didn't break my neck.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not paralyzed. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah. And it's true, you know, because, you know, anything like, you know, like I differentiated, you know, physical pain from emotional pain, you know, and I was good at physical pain, but I wasn't very good at emotional pain. And then, you know, when I went through some emotional times in my life, I'm like going, God, I thought you said you'd only give me what I could handle, you know, but this is killing me. You know, it's like, you know, but yeah. You revert back to that, you know, that training, you know, that stuff that I went through, the struggle, and you can handle it. And you find that, yeah, it is true. You can handle anything, you know.
But you have that faith. But in order for us to grow as not only people, but as souls through our adventure, through this journey that we're going through in this life, you only learn by adversity. You only learn from the weight of life. Just like in a gym, you're lifting weights to grow your muscle. You need that weight. You need that stress in order to go through it, in order to grow. It's not fun. It's not easy. It is painful. I didn't want to go through breakups when I was going through. I didn't want to go through a lot of the stuff that I went through. I mean, I wrote an entire book about how I almost made a $20 million movie for the mafia and almost had my life threatened for a year while I was meeting the biggest movie stars in the world at 26. So that was basically my broken neck.
Yep.
In my life, that was my broken neck. That was my journey that I had to go through. Yeah. And it took me years to figure out. And I'm talking over a decade to figure out the gift that was. Do I wish I didn't have to go through it? look, I'm sure in one where in there's a voice in your head like, if you had the choice, would you do it again? Looking back, I said to myself, yes, I'll go through it again. I absolutely would go through it again because I am who I am today because of it. At the time, I didn't want to deal with it. At the time, I didn't want to go through it. But that's life. Yep. But you are much stronger. I call it shrapnel. It's the shrapnel of life. And you harden and you get stronger and you build this kind of almost armor going through life. And these skills, look at the skill sets of visualization that you've got, I'm sure have benefited you tremendously throughout your life. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is completely, you know, and like you said, and see, like for me, you know, like your journey, your story, you know, scares the heck out of me.
And yours scares the hell out of me.
Exactly. You know, so I'm like, oh my God, you know? So yeah, it is, you know, that is the thing. And we, as you know, as spiritual beings, you know, need to know that we can, you know, there is a gift in the struggle. You know what I mean? And there is a gift in why people did things like, you know, like so many of us, like for me, I remember I blamed my dad my entire life for teaching me the way he did. Like, he never reprimanded me. He never verbally abused me. He never did any of that stuff. He right. taught me so many skills, but I didn't realize, you know, like when he was including me in all of these projects around the house and teaching me at the same time. Well, I didn't think, you know, of him being on a time schedule, you know, to get things done, you know, around the house. It was like, you know, we would be working together and all of a sudden he'd send me off to go get a tool and then he'd finish the project, you know, while I was gone.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And so when I came back, you know, that screamed loud and clear to my little boy, like, okay, you're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not talented enough. And so I got angry, you know, and I got mad. Said, oh, my dad, you know, he caused me to, you know, feel, you know, inferior, you know. And then it's like you said, I'm sitting in my kitchen here just like 2 or 3 years ago. And it hits me like a ton of bricks. Oh my God, if my dad hadn't have taught me the way he did, I wouldn't have coached the way I did, you know, because I didn't want that to happen to my students. So I came up with this kind of a coaching method, which made me successful. And I all of a sudden, you know, I got goosebumps talking about it right now. I'm like saying, thank you, Dad. My God, thank you for teaching me the way you did. I didn't appreciate it at the time, you know, but then again, I saw, you know, here's the gift. And I'm thinking, wow, I blamed him for that all my life and made him the scapegoat. And that wasn't fair either. That wasn't the truth.
There is a perfect genius behind everything and the way it works.
Yeah.
And the older you get, the more you realize that. You know, you just turned 70. I'm 46. You know, I'm raising young children right now and I'm seeing what's going on. And as you get older, you just start to realize, oh, okay, that makes sense now. Like that revelation for you that you just got a minute ago, in the scope of your life, you know, sometimes it takes a lifetime to figure things out like that. But my experience, that horrific journey that I went through for a year of my life is what made me and is the reason why I do a lot of the things I do, because I always want people to avoid falling into these pitfalls, avoid this pain. And if I hadn't have gone through that, I'm not sure I would have that empathy, that exactly. kind of empathy with humanity, if I hadn't have gone through that. And you could be going through the worst thing ever. And someone listening to this right now, you could be going through a broken back. You could be sitting in traction somewhere in the world right now. You could have, you know, an abusive family. You could be in the middle of a war. You could be whatever that is. Yeah. Try to find the beauty in it. And I know it's so hard to say that, especially when you're in the weeds, it's hard to say it. And from where I'm sitting here and where from you're sitting there, everyone's like, listen, oh, it's really nice for you to say that. I'm like, no, but we're saying it from someone who's been there in our own world, in our own pain. Because, I mean, the late Dr. Wayne Dyer, who I loved, he blamed his father, his drunk father, I think abandoned him. And he blamed so many things for him. And it took him years to understand that it was because of him that he was able to do so many things. And he actually thanked him for doing what he did to him. As negative, positive, and in the scope of the universe, positive and negative, good and bad, that doesn't really make that's not a concept in the universe. You know, if a meteor hits our planet today and destroys civilization, is it good or bad? From our point of view, it's bad. If we step on an anthill, ants thinking bad. To us, we were just walking.
Yeah.
And that's where people really kind of have to get away from the good or bad thing. And again, you know, we're sitting where we're at right now, but you and I have both been through two very different experiences, but both terrify each other.
Yes, exactly. You know, and I think, you know, and I've heard this somewhere before, you know, but I've adopted, you know, and I talk about it in the book also, is like, you know, if we can just grasp the concept that life doesn't happen to us, it happens for us. Yeah, it happens for us, you know, and once you grasp that concept, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, and when you can actually, you know, stop and look back on your life and see all the things that you did and connect the dots of your life, like what you were saying, you know, that'll give you the awareness to see things from a whole new perspective, and that will transform and change your life.
Absolutely. And now things, when bad things or quote unquote bad things happen to me or things that I feel that are negative, I always pull back for a minute and go, okay, what's the silver lining here? Why is this happening? And why is it happening now? And I'm telling you, 10 out of 10 times, I can't see what's going on. All I could see was like right here, this is what's happening in front of me. But if I wait a few months, or I wait maybe even a year or two, or maybe at a few hours, you go, oh, that's why that happened. That's why I needed to. Oh, I'm late. I'm late for that that meeting because I had to run into my wife. You know, like these are the things that the universe just does. And if you can see the silver lining in the negative and look at it, just like you said, it's happening for us, not to us. And the whole thing to us is ego. Ego is the ego is. I have to ask you this. Let's talk about ego for a second.
Okay.
I mean, you were. I saw some pictures of you when you were a young man. You were a good-looking, strapping young man.
Thank you.
You're a strapping young man. You're an athlete. You're in college. I'm sure everything was, you know, you were getting, you know, going on dates, having life was good. You were on the gymnast team, and then this thing happens to you. Your ego must have been devastated and destroyed, and then it becomes vicious with you. Mm-hmm. Battling that ego, what did you just say, shut the hell up? I've got work to do.
Yeah, you know, I think that to some extent, that's what I did. You know, I just kind of said, you know, shut up or thank you, but no, thank you. I'm not listening to that. You know, I have this vision. I have this track. I'm on it, you know, and that's the way it is. And, you know, speaking of ego, you know, one of the, like you said, how the universe works, you know, one of the reasons that I think, you know, like I always tell people, you know, breaking my neck was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life. And everybody looks at me like, what do you mean? And I said, well, I was going down the wrong path. Like you said, I in high school, gymnastics was kind of a joke and we weren't really accepted as athletes and nobody came to our competitions. I go to college and we have 6,000 people plus at all of our meets and they're sold out. And I walk across campus and everybody's, hi, Gary, you know, and girls are giving me notes and what all that stuff, right? And your head goes, boom.
Oh.
So yeah, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, look at me, you know, I'm all, you know, yeah, I'm big man on campus now, you know, and I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know, and then all of a sudden, bam, you know, let's take that away and see what happens.
Yeah. I'll give you my side of that exact same story. I'm 26. Hey, you're going to make a $20 million movie. Hey, you're going to meet some movie stars. Hey, you're going to do this. I'm like, this is going to be the thing. My ego was like, shh. I couldn't even fit in a building and my ego was so big. And if that movie would have gone, I would have self-destructed. There's no question in my mind. I would have completely gone down the wrong path. I would have self-destructed. I would have hurt a lot of people if I would have been given that kind of success at that moment in my life. So I needed an ex-bipolar gangster to threaten my life on a daily basis for a year to pummel me down to a place where I'm like, oh, and then come back a little bit. But that ego got a big whooping. Just like your ego got a big whooping, and it was a whooping that we needed. We needed it at that time in our lives.
Yeah, exactly. you know? And, you know, I also talk about in the book too, like, you know, like my ego is what actually got me, in trouble, because,
you were trying to do something that only three other people in the country were doing.
Exactly. See, and somebody said, you're you were a perfect candidate for this fault. And I'm thinking, God, you know what this will do for your career? And then bam, like you said, yeah.
So with that said, after everything you did, you went after it again. Was that ego or what was that that made you want to do it again?
Now, I think a little of both because, to be honest with you, I did that vault again, but I only did it once. And I did it in practice because my coach was kind of questioning my manlyhood at the time to be nice about it.
So a fantastic coach. Got it. Really good. a fantastic coach. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. So I looked at my teammates and I said, hey, Robert, I'm going to throw the handspring front. And I hadn't thrown the dang thing since I got hurt, but I'd trained myself, in flipping, and he goes, don't do it. I said, no, I'm going to shut him up. So it is ego and stuff. So I threw the vault in practice. He actually kicked me out of practice for doing that, which was smart, but I just thought, I'm going to do that just to
prove. So, and the universe was kind enough to go, he's done enough. It's okay. Yeah. Let's give it to him again. But if he does it again, we're going to slap him again.
Yeah, exactly. And I changed my vault after that. I did a different vault. I didn't do that vaulting competition.
So you just gotta be careful. That ego does get you, but it can get you. But can you imagine? Oh my God. I can't even imagine if something would have happened again. Oh my God. I'm scared. This is 50 years ago. And I'm like, oh God, Gary, why?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, your story is remarkable. I really hope that people listening will find inspiration in it and understand that you can change things in your life. You can see the silver lining in the pain and the struggle. And that is what makes us stronger. That's what makes us grow. And it's very difficult to do it when you're in the middle of it. I mean, I can't even grasp what you went through in those 3 years. Luckily, you were a young man as well. It happened when you were 20 and not 50. Yep. Because that's a different conversation.
Yep, completely.
Completely different conversation. So there is an alignment that happened that was a perfect timing for you for this lesson. It was a giant life lesson, and it completely shaped the rest of your life. As my experience shaped mine. I'm going to ask you a couple questions that I want to hear your thoughts on. Why do you think we are here as souls, as people?
I think the main thing is to share our gifts, because each one of us has a gift inside to share. And I think our soul's destiny is to share that gift with the world, and no matter what it is. And I just think that all of us are so special, and that, we need to realize that, and that no matter what no matter what your gift is, whether it's just being good at cooking or cleaning or whatever it is, share it with the world, because it helps, And I think we're here to support each other. I think we're here to help each other, and I think we're here to love each other.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And what is your soul's mission here in this life?
Oh, wow. It's interesting, because I actually had a soul reading from a friend. Mm-hmm. They said, you have the 6-6 energy. You are a master creator, And I didn't, and all my life, my soul has been telling me, you're going to do something big. And I never knew what that was. And I've already done it. You know what I mean?
To be fair, you've done a couple things.
Yeah. To be fair. I'd be passing on. But it's like, I just feel like, I want to just be able to help create awareness, for people to understand that they are capable of so much more than they have been told by society or family or whatever that they're capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you look at me, you know, and I'm 5'7" and 135 pounds, I'm not this big, you know, Superman or anything, but we all have the mind is a great equalizer, but the internal intelligence, you know, that we all possess is going to allow us to do anything and everything that we think that is so-called impossible, and just have our mind be this, the servant of, you know, our soul.
Our inner voice of that inner intelligence that I always say to people, look inside, look inward, because that is where you find a lot of the answers in life. Now, where can people find this amazing book and find out more about you?
Okay, so you can find the book at brokentobrilliant.com. That'll take you right to the site. And you can contact me through my website, garybuckmann.com, and it's B-U-C-K-M-A-N-N, two N's.
Fantastic. Gary, thank you for your story. Thank you for putting it on paper finally and on ebook and getting it out there into the world. And I hope that it inspires people around the world to understand that they can change the circumstance, no matter how dire it might be. So thank you, Gary, so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you, Alex, and thank you for doing what you do in the world, and thank you for spreading the word, and thank you for your support in my early days when I was struggling with the book.
My pleasure, my friend. I hope Gary's story is an inspiration to you in your life, for you to understand that sometimes when the bad things, quote unquote, bad things happen to us in life, or we're struggling in our lives, if we look at it as things are not happening to us, but happening for us, it changes the perspective of what is happening to you, and it changes the way you look at it. The toughest times in my life have also been the moments of my life that I've grown the most as a person, as a soul, and it is what makes me who I am, and I would not take back any of those negative, quote-unquote, bad things that happened to me. And I hope Gary's story inspires you in your life as well. Now, if you want to do a deeper dive into everything we spoke about in this episode, as well as getting a link on how to get a hold of Gary and read his amazing book, Broken to Brilliant, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/001. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a positive review on whatever platform you are listening on. It really helps the show out a lot. And remember to trust the journey. It is there to teach you. I'll see you next time.